Is Adam Proto from the Hockey News joins us. Do you know how many episodes are left?
Damn right, it's three.
Three?
Three,
all
only
right.
Three.
Okay.
Yeah.
Now,
I think there's usually more death and destruction by now, but if you follow the pattern of the show, they usually wait until like the second last episode, because everybody usually waits for the last episode to have the cliffhanger. Gagenson would always hit you in the nards with a punch in the ninth.
Yeah, I remember the Red Wedding was the one. That was the best one. People were just devastated by it in one sense. So,
well, and even the first season with Ned, that happened in the ninth episode. So
yeah.
Without giving away too much.
Yeah, if people haven't watched it now, boohoo. Like, there's a certain time limit. Like, I could see if we don't spoil last night, fine. But 2 years ago, sorry. Like,
yeah, get caught
the program. Like, I will say this: if the imp ever dies in the show, that'll be devastation for me. He's my favorite character.
Yeah, you always wonder which one will really get you. For me, it was. I mean, if you follow my Twitter, you'll know I love the Hound.
That was huge.
Was tough for me.
Yeah, especially the way he died. It was so lame. As if he's gonna lose a fight to her. Come on.
But you know what? I keep telling people, like, maybe it's that bitter fan in me that is holding out hope, but did you ever really see him die?
True, that's what I've said too, right? I know they talked about
swinging into the last minute like Han Solo. And,
yeah, he would come, right, exactly. He was living off of berries and twigs in the forest for 6 months.
He got more deranged. Well, and the mountain's coming back, right? So maybe that feud still has to, the Frankenstein mountain's coming back at some point, so maybe they're going to face each other as brother and brother one more time.
Oh, that would be outstanding. facing one another again, Buffalo and Toronto next season, of course, adds a little fuel to it. Now that the Leafs have their coach, what do you think? Like, are they going to have a GM, or is Brendan Shanahan going and Mike Babcock going to be the GM?
Yeah, I think it'll probably be closer to Brendan Shanahan and Mark Hunter, to be honest. I think, with the way this franchise needs to head, Mike Babcock is going to be, tasked with developing the guys that are put in front of him. But Mark Hunter and Kyle Dubas are going to be the main guys who, regardless of who's the GM, are going to be tasked with finding those players and then, developing them down the road at the Rico Coliseum here in the American League and at other levels. So, I think it's, as Brendan said, when he first dismissed Dave Nonis, this job isn't going to be for everybody, and everybody isn't going to be for this job. So you have to go in understanding, I think, ultimately, that Brendan still has the final say. And, I think it's no coincidence, Mark, Jason, that Lou Lamoriello is his mentor, really. When he started, in New Jersey, he started as a player under Lou. Lou started as an executive. And so I think, looking at what he's doing now, it's that same kind of setup where he's going to get some experience. He's going to feel his way around, and then it might not be this year, it might not be 5 years from now, but eventually I think you'll see Brendan Shanahan just kind of shake off the president's role and take on the GM job full time.
And you know what, I know we'll say, hey, didn't have a lot of experience, fine. Well, Steve Yzerman 5 years ago when he got the job didn't have a ton of experience, and now 5 years later has built a pretty good team.
Absolutely true. And he's somebody who, again, this notion that he was, in an ivory tower in the NHL head offices while other people were, talking about the game and watching players play and forming their own opinions is just nonsense. He's talking to GMs every day. He was, talking to owners every day. He understands, the CBA, and I think he understands, most importantly, the leverage that the Leafs have and other markets that want to spend money on stuff that's not governed by the salary cap. And, people will say that he's done that clearly with Babcock blowing the coaching salary structure out of the water. But Casey Bailey, college free agents, they clean out the scouting staff. They're probably going to build it up again, and overpay some people on the scouting scene to build up that area. I think he fully understands that for too long, whether it was Brian Burke, kind of playing by his Marquis de Queensbury rules, or am I getting that one wrong? I'm thinking of, just that code of honor that Brian Burke had in not wanting to leverage anything. I think, that kind of started or stopped going that way when he built up the scouting department. But ultimately, there were some things he didn't want to do that I think Brendan has really no issue doing, and that, the most important thing, obviously, is building slowly for the future, which, as everybody's been trying to manage the message here, it's still going to be a long ways away before they really turn the corner here.
The Leafs have the fourth pick. They also have another first rounder, 21st, I think it is, or 20, I can't remember what the other
24th?
One is. 24th.
Yeah, 24th.
So, and they fired 17 scouts. Tons of people.
Right.
Who Do they have a competent scouting staff, you know, in such an important draft year that many people consider one of the best since 2003?
Yeah, well, they've still got Dave Morrison, who was their, you know, who was their main guy under a number of previous generations. So, you know, there is some continuity there, but I really go back, Jason, to saying, you know, it's Mark Hunter again. It's,
okay.
You know, that's the guy who, you know, has built up a ton of acumen in the Ontario League on the junior scene. He's kind of seen as almost like a Rick Dudley, you know, in the number of hours that he logs on the road that he gets out to arenas to see players play. So scouting is always going to be a gamble to a certain degree, but you can mitigate your chances by having, you know, somebody who is a workhorse there. And that's why I don't think you'll see Mark Hunter named to the GM role. Because that will take him kind of out of that mix, right? You've kind of got to spend more time at headquarters. You've got to deal with the local media more often. I think, you know, Brendan talked a number of times about, you know, not doing things necessarily the traditional way. And I think part of it in Toronto, and I don't know how you feel about this, but I think it's been pretty impressive to see how few leaks have kind of gotten out of Leafs headquarters since he's been in. I mean, nobody really had any clue that a lot of the moves they were making, if not all of them, have kind of been kept up, kept close to the vest. So I think, you know, that it goes to the media side of things. It goes to the GM side of things. I think, you know, some people will say, well, geez, are you really putting all your eggs in the basket of two or three hockey minds? Well, yeah, they are doing it this time because, as Brendan said, they're not just going to bring people aboard because they need bodies or because they need, you know, to put up a front for the media, to please the media. They don't give a damn about us. And that's probably the best thing for this organization.
Who do you think Babcock's looking at for his coaching staff?
It's a great question. I mean, you know, do you want to work with somebody that you're familiar with? And Paul McLean, that option's there. You know, Tony Granato, obviously had a relationship with him. You can certainly always bring along guys that you've worked with before. But again, this is a different situation where, you know, maybe Brendan wants to have some input there. And I'm sure he probably doesn't want to, you know, to insist on people if Babcock doesn't want them there. But, you know, I think there's going to be that spirit of collaboration and, you know, working with people inside the organization to see kind of, you know, who he wants, whether it's, you know, Steve Staios, I know is, I believe, confirmed for his same position or his old position next year. He kind of moved around a little bit, doing some different things here or there with the Leafs this year. But I think the possibilities are endless, only, you know, going back to what I said before, which was, you know, they don't really see a set way of doing things where he has to work with people that he worked with in the past.
Adam Proto joins us from the Hockey News. Adam, do you like the timing of the GM vote of the year? What's the point of doing it after the second round?
It's a really great point. I think it's one of those things where maybe it's a media managed or a PR managed thing to kind of, you know, how pro leagues like to keep their names in the news, you know, as daily as possible. That's why awards are kind of rolled out, you know, every day for a couple weeks. They, you know, every night at 6 o'clock, you're going to get something that reminds you of the NHL. So I think, you know, the average fan will look and see the names of GMs and have something else to talk about or debate, and that's probably good for the league in some regards. You know, but I think at the same time, do we need to decide that? Is that not the GM ultimately of the year, the guy that wins the Stanley Cup? Is that an award that, you know, that how do you differentiate? I mean, it's almost like coach of the year, right? You could make a great case for 5 or 6 or 7 or 8 coaches in my mind every year. And, you know, we judge them in after the playoffs are over, when, you know, the memories of someone like Paul Maurice even maybe, you know, faded in people's minds if he were ever a nominee. But this is the way the NHL likes to do things. And as we know, they don't necessarily change quickly, whether or not it makes sense and stands up to critical thinking.
Moving to the playoff series tonight, Tampa Bay, of course, and the Rangers have the day off, but the Hawks and the Ducks. I'm not sure how much you see the Ducks in the East Coast, but now that you've had a chance to see them more throughout this playoffs and series, what's impressed you the most about this team? What surprised you?
I think I've been trying to watch as many games as I could West Coast all year, working more nights for our website. So I feel like, you know, I have seen them. I think what worried me about the Ducks going into the playoffs, Jason, is the fact that they made so many trades kind of late in the year at the trade deadline. You know, to me, that's not necessarily a great sign when you're having success in the standings and you're still, you know, acquiring guys like Wisniewski and some other players. I thought that, to me, was a little bit of a red flag. But, you know, I think what probably has surprised me is just their you know, some of the younger guys stepping forward. Silverberg has been really fun to watch. You know, Hampus Lindholm, I think, as I said, sounds like a law firm or a, you know, a rival of For Better Call Saul or something like that. But Hampus Lindholm's a fantastic young player. I'm still not 100% sure they've got the, I don't want to say a resolve necessarily, but just the pedigree, the acumen, the high panic threshold that the Hawks do. That was the reason they were my cup pick at the start of the season. So I still kind of feel like I think, you know, Chicago can pull this out and win it. But, you know, when you talk about a team that's getting set up for the future, you know, I kind of contrast them with the Rangers, where the Rangers, you know, Nash, St. Louis, you know, those guys, some of their core people are headed closer to the wrong side of their careers than the right. I think with Anaheim, it's different. They still obviously are driven by Perry and Getzlaf, but the cast they've kind of built up around them and the young players they've developed, and that will continue to develop to me, you know, kind of signals the message that if they don't wind up winning this year, they probably won't be far behind maybe winning, being in that position where you can win 2 out of 3 years or 3 out of 5 years, the way it kind of seems to be the modern dynasty for the NHL these days.
Well, and, you know, it's interesting you mentioned that. Adam Brodo joins us from the Hockey News, is that, you know, Detroit's here now. They're 10 years in the playoffs. Pittsburgh's been 9, Chicago 7. And there's actually only like 9 teams that have made the playoffs 2 years in a row. Right, like it's extremely difficult in today's day and age to have any sort of continued success.
Well, and you know, here's a team that nobody really talks about, but Carolina, right? I mean, Carolina, would they still be in Carolina if had they not won the cup in 06? I mean, they've missed the playoffs ever since. They've really been, you know, in some ways, you know, Edmonton South, you know, in a lot of regards with some of the younger players they've brought in. They've kind of been unable to build up a defense core that's respectable. You know, there are some teams out there that just never seem to figure it out. Florida, again, some people picked Florida to make the playoffs this year. I think we did as a magazine, even though I wasn't kind of on board with that when we debated it. But, you know, they get close, they still don't get in. I mean, Boston, you know, you go from the President's Trophy 1 year to out of the playoffs the next year. I think that and the Kings, you know, is what keeps GMs up at night. It is what causes premature gray in their hair, because, you know, you worry that one catastrophic injury here or there, one bad month here or there, you know, not peaking at the playoffs at the right time, even if you do play well as the Rangers. You know, what I'm seeing from the Rangers is kind of what I've felt was going to come true all along, was that they were, you know, they were going to look great in the regular season, and then their main guys were going to be in trouble. And that's really all it takes to, you know, to sink your playoffs and your Stanley Cup hopes.
Adam, quickly, who are you picking to make the Cup final?
I'm still going to go with what I did at the start of the year, which was Chicago, Tampa, and you know, the Lightning to me seemed to be getting stronger. Before this round started, Jason, I would have said that, you know, the winner of the Western Conference Final was the de facto Cup champion, but I don't know anymore. I think the way that Tampa Bay is showing some resiliency with some of their younger kids stepping up, Killorn, you know, has clearly impressed John Cooper and a lot of other people. So they've got a wealth of riches, and I think the improvement of Victor Hedman and blossoming there too. I think Tampa Bay might be able to give Chicago a bigger run for their money, especially because they've leaned on their defensemen for so long through this series. I think that might come up to bite them. So to me, still Chicago, Tampa Bay, but I'm probably going to wind up sticking with my Hawks pick.
And right now, who do you think the Leafs are leaning towards at the number 4 pick?
Ooh, I think Dylan Strome. I mean, if that's not where Arizona goes, then they'll go with Hanifin, I would imagine. I don't think they're going to necessarily go with Marner because there's a familiarity factor with Mark Hunter. But, you know, if Strome is available, then certainly I think that's their number one target.
Always good to talk to you, man. Have a great day. Enjoy GOT next Sunday.